This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. Yeah, there it is! When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin! And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're planning that vacation, maybe you're taking a break from looking at different flights and different car drives and packing up the things and the putting the who's a what's it's in the place. Maybe you just need 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness in your ear holes where we're going to give it to you. Because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those amazing people bring this show to you. Their support, their generosity means we get to keep making episodes. And in exchange, they get cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a bunch of bonus content, including extra stuff, extra episodes, extra things to get them through the week. You got your Feeling This with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman talking about the feelings behind video games, multiple seasons, more coming soon. We got the Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins us. And we dip into the mailbag. We look at what the patrons want to talk about. So much fun, wacky times, always a good time. Patreon.com/DLCpod if you want to be part of it. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who single-handedly turned our episode Discord into knife talk, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian!
We have a lot of great pocket knives in the community. It's fun to see. Fun to see. I got to show off my brass knife in there as well. We talked about it on a Wednesday show.
I was scrolling and I went, they're still talking about knives.
Yeah.
Talking about knives.
And guess what, dear listener? If you're listening to this episode, but then you get to listen to Wednesday's episode, check your email because Summer Santa gave away 10 free 1 month Cool Ranch tier subs to the Patreon. Those emails went out, so congratulations to those folks joining the Wednesday show brouhaha knife talk. Welcome to Knife Talk Wednesdays.
Knife talk. Yeah, we call it Knife Talk now, evidently.
Taken, so we had to do something
huge,
else.
Huge thank you to our Secret Santa who keeps coming through, even in the summertime. Santa swinging by, the reindeer in their summer shades and tank tops. It's amazing. It's a beautiful thing, and we're grateful that we get a patron who wants to share the love of the Patreon to folks that haven't tasted it yet. Thank you. And we appreciate all the folks that entered the drawing as well. Hey, quick program note. Just wanted to give everybody a heads up. I will not be here next week. Christian's going to be holding down the fort. We will have an episode as usual with all new content. But
dude, I'll say it. I mean, things can fall through, but Philippe and Alex Solman are going to join me. So we're celebrating the 4th of July weekend the only way we can on DLC with two Brits. Where I beg them to take me back.
Yeah.
I beg them to take me back for 90 plus minutes in your ear holes.
Yeah. So she'll be as usual. I'll miss everybody, but Fam and I are going on a little family trip. Should be fun. Hey, we have a big show for you this week, though. Lots of cool games to talk about, some interesting news and tidbits to dive into, and, ladies and gentlemen, an awesome guest to do it with. You know the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, oh, I'm excited because DLC once again stands for Dompierre Links the Community, because we have social media manager at Illphonic Games, Miles Dompierre, back with us. Hey, Miles, how are you?
Gentlemen, it's good to be back. I am awesome. I love talking games with you guys. It's been a minute. We've, you know, behind the scenes, we've been coordinating for a little bit, making some moves, aligning the planets for this to happen. But I'm excited to be here and excited to dive into some game talk with you dudes.
We love chatting with you. It has been a rocky road, and mostly on my end on that one. But Miles is awesome, and we're glad to have him. So let's jump in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's also where you can send comments, questions, anything you like. We love hearing from you, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Not the only place, though, to reach out. You can also join the aforementioned Discord if you like knives or, you know, video games, I guess we could talk about there as well. The Discord is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of fun folks hanging out, talking all sorts of cool topics. But Miles, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, Resident Evil is a franchise near and dear to my heart, so I'm going to have to say the story of the week is the old Capcom annual showcase we got this past week.
Indeed, we got a Capcom spotlight that focused on a number of games in their slate. Some games upcoming, some games already out, some updates to Monster Hunter and Street Fighter VI, you know, a couple of other things. But I think the big unreleased stuff, Pragmata, which kicked off the spotlight. And yes, as Miles indicated, Resident Evil Requiem, which... we had seen for the first time just in the Summer of Games Fest recently, just a few weeks ago. And now we got, I think, really the first tidbits, little snippets of gameplay. So, Miles, what did you think of what they showed of Resident Evil Requiem?
So there's been a lot of, if you're a Resident Evil sicko like myself, the lead up to this game has been filled with a lot of speculation. And for the longest time, everyone assumed this was going to be Leon's big moment in the current timeline, because we've had RE2 remake, we've had RE4. So we've seen Leon, the new and improved Leon, but we haven't seen him as the 51-year-old man in the current timeline like we saw Chris with Village. So everyone going into this was like, yeah, this is going to be the Leon game. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then they threw us a big curveball and said, no, actually, Leon, we couldn't make him scary. So there's been some hot debates about that them
he's
coming out in
cool
the showcase
to be frightened by things. See,
I mean, after so many roundhouse kicks, yeah, it's hard to imagine a scenario where Leon's this timid guy who's getting scared by what's around the corner. So I get it from that perspective, and they're leaning into this introvert, this who's easily scared, I think was the exact wording they used. And
Grace,
I love that
Ashcroft is going to be the protagonist. Yes.
Grace Ashcroft.
And but I love also that they poked Pauline, fun at
the community.
Also, Pauline wasn't in any of the Donkey Kong Bonanza trailers until like last week, right? Like, I know it's Nintendo and this is Capcom, but like, you know, do we know?
You think it's a swerve?
Tinfoil hat time.
I wouldn't be. So every Resident Evil since, I guess, since six, so like seven, eight, and now not seven and eight, I guess it's just two, feels like more than that. They've had some swerves in them in some form or fashion, and not like necessarily playable character, but Village was pitched and advertised as a village. And it has, I think, in my opinion, one of the best constrained mansion moments of any Resident Evil. That at no part of that marketing campaign was it shown off to be that, you know? Six had all sorts of swerves in it in terms of the family and what was going to happen there. So I'm not predicting it, but if it happens, I won't be jump scared, Miles. I won't be jump scared.
If I'm being honest, yeah, we saw Chris, spoilers if you haven't finished Village, but there's a moment in Village where towards the end, you get to be Chris and you just, the game completely shifts tonally and you're just running around with a fully automatic weapon, just killing hundreds of werewolves. So I'm imagining we're going to get something like that with Leon, the big climax where Leon is there to save the day or do something epic. But if I'm really diving down the rabbit hole, I think there's a world where you play the game as Grace, which then has this, what they call an RE2, the basically campaign A and B. So I'm thinking there's a possibility where we do get the B campaign where you do play as Leon. That's just totally a very different experience. They scare you with Grace, make you play the tense RE7 spooky game. And then they say, okay, here you go. Start roundhouse kicking. Let's blow the doors off this thing.
You know, I think people would dig that. The exact quote, by the way, from the game director, Koshi Nakanishi, is, we always thought about making Leon the protagonist, but making a horror game based around him is difficult. He wouldn't jump at something like a bucket falling. No one wants to see Leon scared by every little thing, so he's actually quite a bad match for horror. So we had to get this lady, because they, you know how they are about buckets. They'll jump at every little bucket falling.
Am I right? I love that they're basically saying, we wanted a character that represented the players more. So they're like introverted, scaredy cats. All right, here you go. That's you. You get to play as that now. You don't get to play as the cool guy anymore.
I got to say, though,
I think I said six in the family. That's seven. Seven is the family. Yeah. And then there were reveals. Whatever. You know what I meant.
Unforgivable.
A bucket fell and I jumped and I misspoke. I couldn't help it.
The actual footage that they showed, though, I mean, it wasn't a lot. A lot of it was from the trailer that had already been revealed. But the little bit of sort of her having the lighter and then it kind of illuminating her hair as she was walking in the dark, I thought looked really good. What do you think about that, Miles?
Yeah, they talked a lot about how they basically got some wig physics. They got this specialty wig that they use to elevate their hair physics. And they really show it off in the trailer because you have, like you said, the glow coming through the hair. You have the moments where she's hanging upside down and the individual strands are dangling. So that looks really impressive. Visually, the RE engine that they've been using, and I think this is like their big upgrade with this title, if I'm not mistaken, they've put a lot of work into that engine and it really shows. Like we got the moments where Grace is looking very wet and you have the moments where her hair's dangling and little strands are catching on the resistance of the wetness. And so as like a tech nerd, an engine nerd, things like that really show that Capcom is continuing to invest and elevate with that engine. It's looking gorgeous. It's looking really, really good.
Hair was a big centerpiece of the Capcom spotlight. That they started off with Pragmata. And you get a lot of hair dancing around in that that game as well. You've got that little girl who's on the back of the dude, and her hair is just all over the place. I was like, it's impressive what we could do with hair these days. But also, let's tone it down a little bit with the hair. It's all over like they're dancing, they're running, they're flopping around, and the hair is just going crazy. It was pretty cool. What did you think of Pragmata? We saw a little bit about that game earlier in the year as well, but now they finally revealed this very unique combat system that the game is going to use that is sort of part third-person action shooter, but also part puzzle game. And so it's these two characters, this little girl that's clung on the back of the big soldier dude. And in order to unlock the armor of these robots that are approaching them, she has to use her special power, which is a little mini game that pops up. Little, I think, shades of Helldivers 2, perhaps, or other things. So you're kind of managing two things at once, where you have to like do this very almost connect the dots puzzle grid thing. And then that allows you to do damage with your weapon that you do in a traditional third person action game. I think interesting, bold choice for a big AAA game to have something this different. What did you make of it, Miles?
Yeah, one thing I really appreciate about Capcom right now is the way that they leverage these anchor IPs like Resident Evil to create new IPs like Pragmata, Exo Primal, Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess. There's been all these avenues where they can experiment with gameplay ideas. Yeah. I loved Kunitsugami because of the way it took kind of the Pikmin formula and turned it into this third person or this isometric action game. So I was really impressed by that. And so we all assumed Pragmata was going to be a third person sci-fi action game. And in a lot of ways it is that, but then they have that mechanic you described where you are essentially in real time doing this puzzle mini game, hacking this robot to be able to then shoot it. So they're taking the traditional third person over the shoulder shooter and adding puzzle mechanics to it, which is really interesting. And I'm really curious to see how that evolves. They alluded to if you do specific combinations that increases the damage you do. So I wonder how meaty that is and how much that's going to play in. And then I also wonder, like, in the moment or after doing it for 12 hours, is it going to remain interesting? Or is it going to be like, oh, I gotta hack this guy again? So I'm interested, and I trust Capcom to really kind of deliver some interesting ideas. But I guess that wasn't what I was expecting. As soon as I saw that puzzle mechanic, that wasn't necessarily what I was expecting. But it's a nice twist, I think, to help it feel different.
Yeah, that looks like it could be really fun. Like I said, it reminds me of the kinds of things you do in Helldivers 2, where you're managing this chaos of the third-person action game, and you also have to sort of change your brain mode to do this very intricate input. And it adds a lot of wonderful tension in that game. And I can imagine here where you have these androids, you know, marching toward you slowly, and you can't defeat them until you've, you know, hacked their shields away. And so you've got this sort of ominous, slow approach that adds tension, and you're trying to do the correct, you know, thing. And if you get it wrong, I'm sure what they showed us was the very early complexity of how these puzzles are going to go. And I can imagine it getting really intense later on. I think that could actually be a really fun process in that game, or a fun feeling of, hopefully it doesn't get old, right? Because I feel like if mm-hmm. every single enemy is that feels, I don't know.
I think it looks gorgeous. I'm there for the hair, as Miles and I are also both starting to rock our luscious locks.
Yeah, you guys could be in a Capcom game yourselves.
Thank you. Yeah, Wig Tech was modeled after us, NDA, but yeah. It was. So
I'm stuck in old classic Leon mode.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's why you don't scare at buckets.
You can't put me in a new game, right? My hair's not long enough.
Your hair's not long enough. Not good. I think for Pragmata specifically, it is the one Capcom game that the more of the show, the less interested I am. Like, it starts off, I'm like, ooh, this looks so cool. What a fun melding of sci-fi act. I haven't seen the sci-fi. Ooh, a straight shooter. They haven't really done a straight shooter since. And then it's like, well, it's not a straight shooter. It's not this. And I was just like, oh, to me, what I was getting flashbacks of, and I think the way you described it is accurate, Jeff. I just think that my game anxiety sees that the way you see a timer on a screen of like seeing, you're telling me I'm doing a Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker mini game, puzzle mini game, while impending death is marching at me. And I was just like, no, I do not. That does not sound like a good time.
I love the big swing of it. You know, it feels like feels like something really different. And I mean, not, you know, obviously it's not unprecedented, but it feels like, you know, to wrap this big AAA new franchise around something that unique feels pretty cool and daring. It's not what everybody else is doing, and I appreciate that.
100%. Yeah, and I think Miles too made some great points that Capcom's been doing a lot of that recently, taking some swings and while they're what the rest of this presentation was about, continuing to ride established franchises, right? Like Street Fighter VI, Sagat coming, and new characters. And they spent, I didn't time it. I mean, we could scrub through, I guess. I feel like most of it was about Monster Hunter. Like that felt
a lot
like
of Monster Hunter stuff. Clearly, Monster Hunter is, you know, big hit for them.
Huge.
And they have some really cool new content coming, including underwater fights, which looked awesome. So, you know, I understand why they would spend so much time on that. And, you know, and we got to show those Street Fighter bathing suits. Like, you know, you got to show those. So I get it. I get it. But I think, you know, opening the show with Pragmata having Resident Evil Requiem in there, this was a pretty strong showing to me as far as Capcom's current slate, what they're, you know, what they've got upcoming, what they've got still going right now. You know, I was pretty impressed. I thought it was a pretty good show overall.
Yeah, I mean, the Monster Hunter fans especially have been just hungry for more Wilds.
Yeah.
And so they delivered that with the showcase. You got the Ligaiacris coming, you have new monsters, you have more crossovers. So there's a lot of stuff coming to the game. And if you've been kind of following the community sentiment, a lot of people consumed and absorbed every little morsel from launch Wilds, and they've been hungry for more. So this is kind of their first step towards that Iceborne moment where they're going to inevitably do their big year one expansion. But I think this is a nice way to get people talking about the game, getting people engaging with the game again. Street Fighter VI, similar approach. They've done 2 years worth of fighters at this point, and now Sagat's coming. So, yeah, new IP, blockbuster games, and all of this is coming very soon. Resident Evil Requiem is in February.
Crazy.
Really, really quick.
And if you were looking for, you're hoping to tune in and get some sick guitar licks, also had that, you know? So there you go. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
My story of the week is the Netflix of games refuses to be the Netflix of games.
Not anymore. Well, it has to be a different Netflix. Not Netflix. Netflix isn't doing it. Somebody else can be the Netflix of games.
Someone else can be the Netflix of games. Netflix. So let's talk about the real story. Netflix, not too long ago, recommitted that they still are into games. Yes, they laid off their big AAA publishing side of it, but gaming is still vitally important to us. They started testing TV gaming using your phone as a controller, and they released some exclusive games. I think Monument Valley 3 came out around that time. They redoubled down. Maybe that was a little before, and then they redoubled down, like, yeah, gaming is still super important to us. Blah, 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 blah. And now they're coming out and saying Monument Valley 3 is leaving the service pretty soon, along with it's a lot of games.
Every game you might want to play on Netflix.
Games that you and I might want to play, right?
That's
like 20,
right.
Yeah. It's 20 titles. It's big name titles. And it feels like they must have metrics showing that what people are connecting with on the service aren't these air quote traditional video games, and maybe they're more the Match 3 or the Link to the Show experiences. Because when you look at some of these games that are going away, Hades, Braid, Monument Valley, Case of the Golden Idol, and like I said, Monument Valley 3, which was an exclusive Netflix game, those are the gamer games, you know, like those are the things that you would show at a Summer Games Fest. And this, I don't know what their strategy is, but Netflix has always touted themselves as the kings of data. So I feel like they must have something showing that, like, hey, these just aren't doing it for us. Or, Jeff, licensing is too much and not worth it, and we want to own the vertical stack.
That's interesting because, you know, I think that it's clear that we've seen how this works with Netflix with other types of content where movies will leave. You know, clearly they design their licensing agreements, their contracts with these creators that, you know, that end after a period of time. And this seems to me like they had Hades and Braid and Monument Valley and some of these other games for a period of time and could choose to continue that or not continue that. And they're not continuing that. And you're right. It must mean that folks aren't playing them, but who are they telling that they even have these, right? It feels like the messaging around this, as we have said over and over, has been absent. It just feels like I, as somebody who's tied into all this stuff, just don't see them making a big deal about it, don't see them advertising that you can play games like this on the service. Now, granted, I don't often access Netflix on mobile. Like, that's not how I usually sit down on my big TV on my couch and watch Netflix. So maybe I'm outside the loop of who they're even targeting, but still, it just feels like even then you could let me know, hey, you know, you're sitting down to watch Squid Game season 3. Guess what? You could be playing Hades right now on your mobile device. I think that it just hasn't happened at all. And now it's not going to happen because it seems like they're just completely contracting this and retreating from this entire initiative. Miles, have you seen any ads for Netflix gaming at all, just anecdotally?
No. This, to me, this feels like a prime example of the pandemic pivot falling off and not panning out. They had all these people during the pandemic using Netflix. Like Christian said, they're probably looking at the data saying, oh, there's so many people in here right now. We could get more people if we catered to all these different pockets, one of those being gaming. Everyone's playing games right now. There's no games on Netflix. What are we doing? And so they spend all this money to invest in Netflix gaming. And then you have this branding crisis because it's called Netflix, Flix being movies. And then you're ham-fisting games in because you want this app that does it all. And every single tech company wants the app that does it all. And they're looking at all these algorithms and just filling content for the sake of content without actually thinking about why people are using Netflix, which, sorry, in my eyes, is not to play video games.
Yeah.
And so then you have this exact situation. They try it for a couple of years. It doesn't take off. It's not getting new people to sign up for Netflix. They're not getting a ton of engagement with the people who are signed up playing games. So they're not paying, they're not renewing the contracts for licensing. They're not licensing new things. So this, in my eyes, feels like an inevitability just based on how Netflix approached this foray into gaming. And it's unfortunate because a lot of people have to kind of live with the repercussions of Netflix not being willing to commit to this pivot.
It's a shame because, you know, the way this started was they had set up this internal team. They were calling Team Blue. They had recruited a bunch of really big name developers, including Joseph Staten, who was one of the original Halo creators, the art director from God of War. That studio closed. They didn't ever released anything. Who knows even what they were working on? We didn't ever even get a potential idea of what type of game they were working on. It just, they ramped it up and shut it down without ever even talking about it again. So, you know, the idea of them creating their own sort of big AAA stuff never materialized. And then, so, okay, we're going to license, games, good games. We're going to put good games on this platform. And that now seems to have fizzled or is in the process of fizzling. And so it just feels like this whole initiative never really embraced it fully or give it time to even become anything. And to me, the biggest question with all this is something, you know, Christian, you brought up, which is Monument Valley 3 doesn't exist anywhere else. It was an exclusive to this platform.
It's coming other places, which feels like, you know, I think they probably knew this deal was in, and they're like, the Switch, get on the Switch.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's the best possible outcome of all this, is that more people get to play that particular game or will know of it because it's not shackled to a platform that really just didn't have its heart in games from the beginning. But we'll see. I mean, I hope so. I think there's more than one of these exclusive. There's a Rainbow Six game that was also exclusive to Netflix. So there hasn't really been any official announcement that I've seen. I don't know, maybe you saw, Christian, but I haven't seen any official announcement of where these games are going to go or what's going to become of them now that Netflix is not going to have them available on their service. But
yeah, I mean, I think the last official announcement was they were going to do a game a month.
Yes, that never happened either.
It isn't happening, and I don't know if they're supposed to be tie-in games or not, but that was the last official ta-dum or something like that announcement. Yeah. I think that was the last official announcement I saw. And, you know, again, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You've already typed your email. You've already sent it our way. As Jeff mentioned, yes, shows cycle off of these streaming services all the time. Oftentimes they're the licensed shows. Friends was on, you know, what, Netflix for a time, and then you had to move over to Peacock or wherever it is now. So it's not uncommon to see this games leave Game Pass, games leave Apple Arcade, games leave services. What I think makes this a potentially bigger story is just the potential signposting for what it means for, as Miles correctly pointed out, the company we all know as NetGames, and what their long-term strategy may or may not be. It really feels like, hey, we have this audience. We have this audience on mobile devices, phones or tablets. Hey, gaming on phones and tablets is a capital B billion-dollar industry. Peanut butter, meat, jelly, go. Yeah, go. And they can't quite seem to make it go. So I'm curious if we'll see more of this, or is this just the cyclical nature of licensing games for a service?
TBD. We'll keep our eye on it, but I don't have any hope that Netflix is actually, this feels like the beginning, not even the beginning. This feels like midway down the decline. This feels like we're pulling the plug. We'll see. We'll see. I never really even tried it, honestly, which I guess is on me, but on Netflix. Like
for a time, there was a splash screen when you opened up the Netflix app that was like, here are the games. Mm. And then like 3 months later, that was nowhere to be found. And you have to really dig to find the games. So I think that was the telltale sign that that was not getting the engagement that they were hoping for.
Indeed. All right. Well, we have more stories of the week coming up. We got to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. All right. You know, we talked a little bit about Capcom at the top, and we talked a little bit about Street Fighter VI at the top of the show. But my story of the week is more Street Fighter news, this time in Hollywood. Of course, we know there has already been an unbeatable Street Fighter film. The amazing Raul Julia, the incredible Jean-Claude Van Damme. I don't know how you top that. Well, they're going to try. We have a new Street Fighter movie in the making, and we got some real juicy casting news. None of this was in the Capcom spotlight, by the way, which I feel huge missed opportunity, Capcom. Come on. Blaze it from the mountaintops. Tell them we got 50 Cent. 50 Cent, which I believe is how you pronounce it, has signed on to play Balrog in the upcoming new Street Fighter movie. This is the Street Fighter movie that will be directed by Kateo Sakurai, who directed Bad Trip and lots of the Eric Andre show, and seems to have a lot of enthusiasm for this project. 50 Cent is Balrog. Jason Momoa. Yes, the Jason Momoa. Minecraft movie's own Jason Momoa. Just doubling down on video game movies. He will be playing Blanka. which leads me to believe that Blanca will have a larger role in this than I would have thought. And I wonder if it's going to be a lot of CG Blanca, or if Blanca is not going to be a beast man, or if there's going to be some extra hairy bits on his forearm. Well, who knows? But he's Blanca. WWE superstar Roman Reigns will be Akuma. We have a number of other folks that I think are maybe less known. Kalina Leong is Chun-Li. Andrew Schultz will be playing Dan Hibiki. And the lead character, Ryu, will be played by martial arts actor Andrew Koji. Orville Peck also playing Vega. People are big fans of Orville Peck. I know that. I don't know. What do you think of this, Miles? 50 Cent as Balrog? I saw him. I don't know if you saw the Den of Thieves sequel, Den of Thieves 2, Pantera. But 50 Cent has a pretty large role in that
on
movie.
Netflix.
On Netflix.
Your destination Netflix, for man. Games. Yeah. what do you make of this casting? What do you think?
It feels like every few days we've gotten a new bombshell and a new wild card for this cast. 50 Cent being Balrog. He's like you mentioned, he's got acting chops. This isn't his first foray into acting. He's been doing it for a while now. But when I hear the Eric Andre, somebody who's been closely involved with Eric Andre's involved, and then I look at this list of characters and cast choices, I wonder tonally if they're trying to recreate the energy of the unbeatable original, if they are going to just have fun with this, because that's what it feels like. It feels like this is not going to be a serious, I guess, Mortal Kombat, like their comeback from Mortal Kombat was pretty serious in tone with some fan service. I wonder if this is just going to be full camp and they're just committing to it.
What do you think of that? I think that would be so fun. I'm kind of hoping that that's what they do.
Yeah, because otherwise you'll never make the fans happy, really, if you fall into the middle ground of trying to appeal to the wide audience and then also throwing in some fan service nods. But if you just make it a weird, fun movie that just embraces Street Fighter, I think there's potential for it to be really cool. And there's a lot of nods to the music roots of Street Fighter with 50 Cent and Orville Peck. So I will be seated in theaters, regardless of reviews, regardless of previews. I will be there to see whatever the hell this ends up being.
I will be too. I'm cautiously optimistic, right? I think you're spot on with the tone, because, you know, Street Fighter is a little goofy. It's always been a little goofy. And I think what Hollywood hopefully is finding out with this success of Minecraft, the movie, and the Sonic the Hedgehog trilogy, is you got to have a little fun with these video game properties, especially the older ones, right? You can have your Last of Us's, you know, because those are more modern creations that are sort of not in steeped in the history of just silly video game tropes and just sort of being a video game first. And then, you know, Last of Us was created to be a cinematic experience, right? But these older properties, I mean, obviously Minecraft's not older, but I think the idea here is that shoving some sort of self-serious, gritty, grounded interpretation on stuff that was never intended to be that is only ever going to seem dumb. You know, I think it's going to rub people the wrong way. And if you take something that there's a beast man who can make electricity come out of his body, that, you know, there's a bunch of silly characters that are doing kind of a silly thing. They literally punch a car over and over. You know what I mean? That's the video game is not taking itself super seriously. So I think this is the right tone for this stuff. And I think Jason Momoa could certainly do comedy. You know, 50 Cent, who knows? I've never seen him do comedy, but I think this could work. I don't know it's going to be that, but I'm hoping it's going to be that. Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not super stoked for it. I don't love some of the cast that they've announced. I think Orville Peck is, I mean, I don't know him as an actor, but it just feels like he wears a mask Like, it just feels like, who's an actor who wears a mask? We got half of it right here. And he might be a phenomenal actor. I don't know. I don't see him as being as acrobatic. Like, when I think Orville Peck, I picture fringe mask and I picture fairly large guitar, not, you know, tall, skinny guy jumping around on cages. That could just be me. That could be my bias. But yeah. I feel like for these types of movies, and I've been proven wrong before, and I would love to be wrong here, but my feelings about some of the cast aside, when you start seeing the cast list and it's like all the characters, that dips its toe into like, we're going to have some problems. I just feel like it becomes very hard to hit that balance right when they're like doing everybody. I mean, I'm not saying you should do a serious Street Fighter movie, but I think you could. And I think you could call it, I don't know, The Raid. And you have Ryu fight his way through some floors, and that'd be pretty good.
Okay, but
I also saw a really good Street Fighter movie this past weekend, and I'll talk about it at the end of the show, Jeff. So, I mean, you can do it. You can do it with the Ryu. You know what I mean?
Yes, but I kind of feel like why? I mean, if it's just if Street Fighter is just a generic action movie, then why do it? Why not embrace the fact that, you know, there's a boxer against a martial artist, and there is
blood sport, right? Like, I don't know.
But there's, you know, there's this dude that leaps and goes, yeah, and he's a bullfighter, I guess, kind of. And then there's a literal beast man. And then there's, you know, there's a guy with a cape. Why would he be fighting with a cape?
Well, because he needs to learn, he knows Kung Fu, but he needs to learn karate, Jeff. The answers are in other movies for you. You've already.
I'm ready.
I hope the plot is nothing. I hope the plot is the most surface level. Here's the vague excuse for why these ridiculous characters are here. We're going to travel across the globe, give you 2 or 3 minutes of each character, have the big climax, and we all clap in the theater and go, yeah.
It's literally just, you know, Indiana Jones style map with airplane flying over it, like the menu from Street Fighter 2. And then they get there, and there's a bunch of people standing in the street, kind of doing the same thing over and over.
And then people in the crowd like, what's the deal with the Beast Man? And you get 30 seconds on his origin story.
Yeah.
What I don't want, and a few movies have done recently, is like you set up this cool fight tournament and then you speed through 7 fights in 1 30-second montage. Like, I'm here for the fights. Don't montage the fights.
Don't montage the fights.
Let me see the fights.
Yeah.
Montage the story. Don't you dare montage the fights.
Yada, yada, yada the story. I'm into it. Yeah. The question is, who's playing Guile? You know, we haven't seen that yet. Give me a Guile.
Ooh.
I mean, why isn't it still Jean-Claude Van Damme? You know, bring
him back.
Yeah,
bring him back.
Old Guile. All right, I'm into it.
I take a lot of Guile.
All right,
I'm at a loss. I don't know who would be Chris Pratt. Let's keep him. Keep him busy.
Yeah,
Chris Pratt. And the voice of Guile, Chris Pratt.
The voice of Guile. That's good. All right. Well,
Do you know who it could be? Sorry. I know you keep trying to. Do you know what's his name? Twisters.
He's so hot right now.
Yeah,
he's so hot.
Hitman.
Right now.
Yeah, what's his name? I can't remember his name, but yeah, he's hot.
He's so hot right now, but all three of us don't know his name.
Well,
I'm going to find it. I'm going to find his name.
He's too big for
Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Glenn Powell.
He could be Guile, but he's too big for this franchise. He's too big.
Yeah.
They can't land him. Although Momoa is pretty big, but I feel like they lost all their budget on Momoa. You got to pay for Momoa up in here.
He's like, I'll do it, but it's going to cost you some Momoa money.
Momoa money. Yeah.
Momoa money.
And Brad Pitt as God. All right. If you're finished now, Christian, I will transition us into games again. And we'll jump in to our playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Miles, there are a number of reasons why I'm delighted to have you here. Always fun to chat with you. But also because we have yet to have anybody on the show talk to us about Elden Ring Night Rain. And it's been it's been a glaring omission. I know there's been a lot of games coming out, things hitting us on all sides. Christian and I aren't really playing it. So very happy to hear you talk to us about Night Rain, because it's a big deal, and it hasn't been. I'm a bit surprised to see that it did not land with a universal acclaim. There has been some more tepid response to this multiplayer Elden Ring than I was expecting.
I played the closed network test, and even as someone who loves From Software, loves the Souls-like formula, I walked away from the network test saying, this is a weird game, and not everyone's going to love it. Mm-hmm. And that was reflected in the reviews. It's a very mixed, it's a very polarizing game. That being said, it has a very dedicated, passionate following, and I will make a parallel that maybe eight people will understand. And Elden Ring Night Rain is essentially Harmony of Castlevania Harmony of Despair. So it takes the greatest hits of From Software, Dark Souls, Sekiro, Elden Ring, and just Frankensteins it into a weird multiplayer game that you play through levels as fast as you possibly can. You run around the map as fast as you possibly can, getting upgrades, getting items, boss rushing it. So it's methodically completely different than Elden Ring, which is very slow and deliberate. This is go. You don't even have time to read. All right, pick up that gear. We got to go to the next point. So you're yelling at your buddies and your squad like, dude, the circle's closing in. We got to go. So it takes elements of battle royales, the core From Software gameplay, which is just some of the best in the industry, and tries to give you an entire open world RPG experience in 45 minutes. So it's a game that initially is very jarring. Like, you load into this, you pick your boss, and you're overwhelmed. There's things are closing in. You have to go get items. You have to go get gear. There's world events that happen. You don't know what's going on for the first, I would say, 10 hours in this game. You're just doing everything as fast as you can without understanding why you're really doing it. But it's already my most played game of this year. I'm like 95 hours in.
Wow.
And it's just, the loop is just there because I love replaying through like Dark Souls 3 and Elden Ring. I've done that many, many times, but that's like a 50-hour commitment. And you, like, for me, I'm the person who replays the game, does the same build every single time. It's like, I just have, you know, the comfort build. You're playing through Skyrim again. And you're like, I'm going to mix it up. No, I'm not going to mix it up. I'm going to do the exact same thing. This game kind of forces you to. So I'm using weapons and gear that I wouldn't, and I get to live that build for just a small slice. So it's not for everyone, but if you have a core group of friends and you want to play like a speedrun RPG, it is so fun and it's so addicting and the loop is so, so good.
And you only have teams of three, right?
It's, yes, you can play right now either solo or three players.
And explain to me a bit about sort of just the process of it being a 45 minute full, you know, top to bottom experience. Is it sort of like akin to something like a MOBA where you're leveling up every couple of minutes and, you know, you're able to sort of build a character much quicker than you would over the, you know, 100 hours of actual Elden Ring?
So yeah, I guess it would be akin to a MOBA in the sense that there's eight classes. So you before you load into the match, you select your class. There's like a mage archetype. There's more of a ninja archetype. There's like a barbarian, and all of them have a special ability and an ultimate ability. So that's very MOBA. You kill enemies. You build up your ultimate meter. You have the big flashy move that's catered to that class. Mm-hmm. Each class also has specific weapons that work better for them. You kill enemies. You level up. But you don't have to choose specific stats. Like, you don't choose, I want to focus on HP this round. You just level up. So it is very much MOBA in that sense. Each class has different stats. Those automatically level up. The game is divided into 3 days. So you fly into the map, Fortnite style. You drop in on an eagle. People can mark where they want to go on the map. As the day ends, the bubble shrinks in and it culminates into a boss fight. The day one boss fight. You do two of those, and then you go to the Night Lord on the third day, which is the big, epic, over-the-top, almost raid-inspired. If you're a big like Destiny or MMO player, all the bosses feel like mini raids, which is really interesting for From Software. But that's the general flow, is you and a couple friends drop into the map. There's all of these landmarks around that have different types of gear and different upgrades. Your goal is to get the best gear and get leveled up as fast as you can before that third night hits and you're thrown into the arena with the Night Lord. Hmm.
And so is there a situation where like you just didn't do a good enough job in the previous days and there's no way to beat the Night Lord at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Like the first time you load into this game, there is no way you're beating the Night Lord. Attempt one, I mean, I don't want to say no one, but even with a bunch of sweaty From Software players loading in, our squad got completely wrecked. I don't even know if we made it to day two. So there's definitely no guarantee. And you have those runs where you get all the best gear, you get all the drops. You're feeling so good. You're feeling confident. And then you go into that boss room and just get slapped around and the fight's over in 30 seconds. And you say, I got to run back another 50 minutes to get to this guy.
Wow. So is there progression that persists over between runs as well?
There is, relics. So you can equip 3 relics per character, which are kind of permanent upgrades. You can swap them out. That's essentially your gear in this. It's more abstract because it's a From Software game, but that's essentially your gear. And you can get these chalices and these goblets, and each one has different color codings, and you can sit there and sift through hundreds and hundreds of relics and like create your build. And then there's an overarching story for each character as well. Like if you want to dive into the lore, there's like these mini campaigns you do, and the events happen within the matches, which is kind of interesting. So there's that, and then there's like cosmetics. You unlock new drip with the currency you earn for playing.
Very cool. And so obviously you're loving it. You're putting in tons of time. Do you think that this is going to be a new prong of From Software gained? I mean, you see a future for this offshoot, this multiplayer offshoot? Is the community strong and consistent?
Yeah, I think it's still at over 100,000 like peak concurrent players on Steam a month after launch, which is really impressive. From Software is experimenting a lot with multiplayer right now. They have Elden Ring, Night Rain, and then the Dusk Bloods is coming out for Switch 2, which is a PvE extraction game using their formula. So they're, much like Capcom, they're testing the water with some new ideas. I think there will be people who show up just because From Software has just a very unique feeling system for its combat that people love and adore. And people like me and my friends, we want any excuse possible to play these games with our friends. So I hope there's more. But right now they're doing these for the sickos who want just the sweatiest, most obnoxious fights. They're doing these harder versions of all the bosses. So once per week, you can do like the Everdark version, which is just the first one they did. It was just impossible to telegraph, just tornado lightning nukes blowing up every second, the ground underneath you exploding, just pure chaos. But if you can't get enough, they just keep doing stuff like that. We're like, all right, we'll just keep making the game crazier, here you go, have at it, good luck. And so a lot of people are really like soaking up that challenge.
That's cool. I'm sure they're hoping it becomes their GTA Online, I'm curious if it has those legs. And it sounds like, from your perspective, it does. That's awesome. Very, very cool. That's Elden Ring Night Rain on Miles's playlist. You've also been playing a bunch of Mario Kart World, as have I. My household obsessed with it. My kids beg to play every day. Come down to my office. I'm trying to keep the Switch 2 in my office, which is not an easy thing to do at this point. But we've been playing a ton. You've been playing a ton?
Yeah. So Switch 2, really, really happy with the console overall. It feels kind of like a Series X where it's what I want, but it does everything better. So I've been going back and replaying Breath of the Wild at 60, which feels like a whole new game. That feels so good. But Mario Kart World, I'm a little ashamed to admit that I've been playing for so long, and it wasn't until last night that I realized you could hold the drift button to jump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cool, and so that opened up all this new tech. I'm just wall riding now and into grinding, because I kept seeing people online like do the jump onto the rails. I'm like, man, what am I missing here? And then it clicked like, oh, I just need to drift but not hold the direction.
Yeah.
And then now I'm just playing courses in entirely new ways. And that's what I love most about Mario Kart World is that the tech for the nerds really who want to just play. No, it doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah,
you just learn in the game, like, have fun.
Yeah.
And so, which I appreciate, you get to create your own fun, but then people like me who are obtuse and don't realize there's this entire another layer to the driving I've been just not engaging with.
Yeah.
But yeah, really solid, really solid game.
Well, we had just night before last, we had the first time that I talked my wife into coming down, and we had the four player full family Mario Kart competition. And it was so much fun. And I have to say, the one thing I am most appreciative of about Switch 2 is that Nintendo supports the Switch controllers on the Switch 2. We would never have been able to play Family Night Mario Kart World if I would have had to go out and buy three more Switch 2 controllers, especially at the prices they're asking.
$95, right? If you want the Joy-Cons.
Nuts. So it would never have happened. Would never have happened. You know, we would have been able to play two players, and each person would have had a half of a Joy-Con, you know, an individual Joy-Con. And but because over time, over the, 7 years, I've accumulated a bunch of, you know, pro controllers and off-brand pro controllers and extra Joy-Cons and stuff. It was cool. We got to do the whole family playing Mario Kart World, and, you know, plugged into the stand. You can have it on the big TV, and everybody's got their own screen, and it was a blast. It's such a fun experience. You know, it's Mario Kart, so it's hard to really dig in more than that. But we love it, and it's been really. The Switch 2 has been a Mario Kart World machine so far, and I'm very excited about Donkey Kong Bonanza coming out. But it's just been like the only game we've been playing on it, but it's been tons of time of family time playing that game in my house.
Have you messed around with the game chat much?
Not at all, because it's mostly my kids playing, so I don't even want to, you know, do that. But have you?
Yeah, I was really surprised, but they showed the videos of the camera,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, oh, okay, that's a little gimmicky, that's a little silly. But leave it to Nintendo to really capture the feeling of couch co-op remotely. Because most of my gaming is done with my friends who live in other states. So we've been jumping on and taking advantage of the cameras and like actually using the game chat feature. And it's really made that experience that's been familiar for so long with like Xbox Party Chat and PlayStation and made it feel new and interesting, and forcing your buddy to turn on his camera and really engage and connect. And then in Mario Kart, you get the goofy face of them driving their car. So when you hit them with the shell, you get to see their reaction.
Well,
and as
awesome.
Gimmicky and silly as it is, it really harkens back to, I think, a time a lot of us really appreciate, which was like sitting with your friends and family, like you just talked about, having those family game nights.
Yeah.
Like having that experience remotely, which isn't something we've really had. Yeah, I'm surprised. Nintendo, of all people, have kind of like raised the bar in that sense.
That's cool. So the way you're using it is you're not sharing screens, or are you? Are you just seeing their faces? How is it working for you? I haven't even dug into that.
So you can do both. Yeah. So you can share your camera, and you can also share your game screen. So there's been games like where you can like say, hey, where do I go? And your buddy can point to where you need to go.
Yeah.
But you can share your game screen and your camera, which is kind of fun.
That's cool. And you know, all the stuff they had shown was pretty low a frame rate for that stuff. Has that had been your experience as well?
That's accurate. Yeah. We're looking at 720p, 15 FPS, I would say. So it's not a premium experience on the video resolution side of things.
Well, there you go. Mario Kart World. Christian, you're still playing a bunch of it too?
So much. My nephew has been over the past few days. We've been doing a lot of four player, three player, a lot of coin chase or whatever they call it. Miles, like the voice chat, like leaving the console across the room, like that works. They talked about
I was so skeptical when they showed the video of the dude sitting on his couch with the game blaring through his speakers using the mic on the Switch. And I was like, I'm going to test it out. I need to see if this actually works. And even though the quality sounds like you're sitting on a couch, you're kind of far away, it manages to cancel all of the noise. Like I was playing with buddies. I cranked up my TV volume just to see if I could annoy them. Like, do you hear this? They said they couldn't hear anything.
Wow.
And I was blown away. I was like, okay, that's cool. Because you get that casual experience. You don't have to wear a headset, but you can still use the mic. And it actually works surprisingly well.
Hmm.
That's great. Yeah, with my nephew here, it's been like, we'll see how much they continue. But like right now, that's like they're, we got to get the camera. We got to keep playing. You know, we got to keep doing that. And I'm like, well, let's test the voice chat claim first. We can do that before we go buy a, you know, 120p camera.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Before we get to Christian's playlist, we'll take another break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with more right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. Christian Spicer, what's on your playlist?
Jeff, we have a game in common.
We do.
So I'll save that, and I'll start with the game we don't got in common first, if that's all right with you,
yep.
So we can blend from one to the other. The game we don't have in common is a dragon I've been chasing, Jeff. I've been chasing this dragon since Keanu Reeves reinvented his career once again and proved that he is the best actor every generation. And he keeps coming out with hits after hits after hits, reinventing himself. And that is John Wick 1. And I've been chasing that John Wick 1 video game. Sidebar, John Wick Hex.
Max Payne?
No, because Max Payne, your bullet timing and shoot far away, right? Like John Wick isn't the Matrix. That was Keanu Reeves's prior reinvention where he was that generation's
is
hero.
It speed? No, I'm sorry. No,
that was another generation.
Yeah.
It's Point Break is what I'm looking for. California Games Collection, Jeff. That's the game. That's what I'm looking for. John Wick Hex, which is a kind of strategy game, does it very well, honestly, in that, you know, it slows it down enough to make it feel like you're John Wick in the sense that you can see the room and do all the things and link all the things, but you're doing it in a you know, slowed down time. Does it pretty good. This game is called Suit for Hire. It just went 1.0, maybe 3 days ago, very recently. It was released in an early release before that. And I think at 1.0 is when they added the third person camera. Before 1.0, it was more top down a la Hotline Miami. Not that graphic style, but more that isometric, you can kind of see through the walls and the doors, and gave off a polygonal Hotline Miami vibe. Suit for Hire now with its 1.0 release very much leans into being the Keanu Reeves simulator, where you can create a character that looks a lot like John Wick. You can also create a character that looks a lot like Neo. If you watch a lot of the 1.0 trailers, there's a scene of your character jumping across a building, shooting, breaking glass into another building. There's a scene of your character with the shotgun rolling around on the ground and then point blank, you know, gun-fooing a character. Like, they're very much saying there's a suit for hire and that suit is bulletproof and you use gold coins and you stay at the Continental. We can't say any of those words, but that's what this game is, you know, alluding to. It is.
Can you make a character that looks like Ted Theodore Logan?
Honestly, no, which is why I can't recommend the game, Jeff. There is no
every
phone booth.
Generation.
If that'd be great, man. If you failed a level, you phone booth back to the beginning and came out again. Like, that's how it restarted you. No, you can't. With this 1.0 now, it is very much Max Payne meets John Wick is like the kind of thing they're trying to do where there is still some ranged combat that can happen in the game. But it also has a little bit of that, still that Hotline Miami DNA in it, where it is difficult. Like you could turn it on like, you know, I'm a little baby, suck my thumb mode or whatever. And I played some in that. In further levels, I was still like messing up. Because while it's not John Wick Hex strategy, there still is, you know, real-time combat puzzle solving happening where you got a gun that only has 6 shots in it, and that's the only gun you're going to have. You know, you can change your loadout, whatever, but in this example. And then from there, you got to find a way to roll through the environment and either do certain moves that then refill some ammo for you or take enemy weapons. And can you get in close to do a stealth kill or close to do a takedown move? Or are you going to fire your shots from range, but then you're out of ammo? So how are you going to get close? So it kind of has that puzzle box action approach, which I think could be really rewarding. That said, this game still does not quite scratch the John Wick video game itch for me. And maybe the thing that got closest, honestly, is Katana Zero, which funnily enough is a game that is leaving Netflix.
That's right. <yeah. laughs>
And totally different. It's a 2D action platformer, but in the sense that Katana Zero, you always felt like I always had momentum and I was always killing and just moving and rolling. And that's kind of what John Wick feels like in these films. And Suit for Hire, it is an indie game made with love, but I feel like the jank isn't quite a feature for me. There are those moments where the animations aren't quite there, or in full disclosure, it might just be me, but I'm not able to do the thing that I'm trying to do. I don't know if it's the hitbox window is off or the timing on my dive is off or something, but I was getting into rooms or encounters that I felt like I had, there's more than one way to solve them, but I feel like I had air quotes solved, but I was still beating my head against trying to make the thing happen the way I wanted it to happen. And that's what held it back from being this true, you know, badass simulator. I don't think it needs to have, it does not have, you know, it's not pushing my 5080, you know, it's not like a show off this graphics to your friend kind of game. But man, gentlemen, when it does click and you do have that room that comes together, that's the promise of the premise. I just wish there was more of that for me.
But it's also $9, right?
Yeah, there's a 1.0 sale where it's, I think, $9. No, I think normally it's what, 15 or something like that. Let me see. Yeah. I can pull it up. I've already bought it. Yeah, normally Steam 15.
Nine right now. Yeah.
$9 right now. So if you're in for like kind of a janky good time that at moments can really capture the feeling of John Wick or Neo or a slightly janky Max Payne, I think you can have a lot of fun with Suit for Hire. But if you watch some of the trailers, or I think some of the streamers that are better gamers than I am, play, that won't be your experience if you're like me. I'm not gun-fooing my way, you know, through these environments. And I think it's also really fascinating that it launched not third-person camera, because I think the isometric camera looks really cool when watching gameplay videos, but I find it personally infinitely harder to play that way because I'm always concerned what's downrange. And when you're isometric, you just can't see that far. Yes, you can see over a wall perhaps, but you can't see as far down a hallway or something. And I kept getting owned. So I definitely appreciate the switch to third person. If you had those problems before, or maybe are interested, that might be another reason to check it out. But yeah, Suit for Hire, it's on Steam. Like you said, Jeff, it's $9 right now. And there are moments of brilliance in terms of that John Wick game. But then I think there's more moments of frustration because it is also, it is difficult. It's meant to be you die, you repeat, you die, you repeat kind of game.
Right. Very cool. What else is on your playlist?
Do you like soccer, gentlemen? Do you like the football?
I do.
You like the football? Well, good, because Mario Strikers is coming to the GameCube collection. Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pass, which low-key I am very excited about, but I think that's July when that is coming. This is Rematch, which, Jeff, I think you talked about. You played a little of the
closed beta. Yeah.
The closed beta before. It has gone wide. I am playing via Game Pass on my PC. And for folks who missed the episode where Jeff first talked about it, it is the national sport we all love, carball. What if carball was played with by people?
Yeah.
You know, what if you took the idea of carball? What was the first Rocket League called? Hyper Carball Soccer Score, whatever. It had like a very cumbersome name. What if you took Rocket League and made it with people?
That's what, no one's done that.
It's shocking.
No one would ever think of that. Why would you ever do that? Rematch is that arcade soccer style game. Games are 3v3, 4v4, or 5v5. And it is a multiplayer game. And it very much has that Rocket League look to it. It is indoor soccer, you know, versus outdoor soccer. You can't leave the arena. The ball can't leave the arena. It bounces off walls. It's made by Slow Cap, the folks who made Sifu. And
Slow
playing
clap.
What did I say?
Slow Cap.
So, that's just me not being the cap on my team.
it basically removes like all of the things that make soccer slow down. You know, it's the ball can't go out of bounds, no penalties, nothing to stop play. And I think that alone is pretty compelling to just, you know, make the game more fun to watch, more fun to participate in. And, you know, obviously, like we said, Rocket League had already done that. But doing it with people this time is it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it feels like an evolution of, you know, Mario Strikers. And we've had Sega Soccer Slam, a game I loved back in the day. Yeah. And we'd have a lot of, you know, co-op parties with that game. I thought it was really, really fun. And what I think Rematch does really interestingly is kind of bring that arcadey experience to soccer. But what Strikers and Sega Soccer Slam relied on were a lot of power-ups and caricatures where in like Soccer Slam, it's like, oh, you're the Matador. So the Matador can do X, Y, Z, or this character is a little faster or something like that. And this isn't that, right? All the characters are the same. You cycle through who plays goalie. So it's not which one person is stuck at goalie.
Brilliant. That alone is such a brilliant idea that every time the ball is scored, a goal is scored, we rotate what position you start in. And just that innovation is so smart because you're never stuck in any one thing for long, but you sort of also have to have all the skill sets in order to really help your team. I just think that's a really smart design decision.
Yeah, it's super smart because it gets rid of the idea of scrambling for who does what or roll queuing or any of that kind of stuff that you see in other multiplayer games. And so I think it's a lot of fun. Like it nails the core idea. Alex Solman and I talked about on an episode of Feeling This, one of the seasons, you know, what is NBA Jam today? And we talked about Rocket League kind of hits on that and how MOBAs and to some extent hit on that. And I think Rematch very much hits on what is a modern day NBA Jam and how do you make it not just an arcade game, but make it something that you want to keep playing.
Yeah.
And by not relying on power-ups, by not having it be overly gimmicky NFL blitz, NBA Jam style tackles or takedowns, and having introducing a more complex control scheme. It's not that, just, yeah.
I think that's the thing that's most impressive to me about Rematch is there seems to be a very high skill ceiling because there's lots of actual kind of rock, paper, scissors stuff going on that's beneath the surface, you know, not right up front. Not, you know, there's a lot of obvious, you know, got to kick the ball into the thing and catch, you know, if you're the goalie, how to catch the ball and block it, you know, stealing and all the things you would expect from a soccer game. But then there's like this next layer down. And this is where I feel like Slow Clap's experience doing Sifu, where they were trying to create, you know, you were talking about the John Wick of games. They were trying to create a very sophisticated martial arts simulation on a certain level. It still felt arcadey and approachable, but could get to something a little more high skill ceiling. I think they brought those learnings to Rematch, and you have stuff like, oh, you can try to steal the ball from me, but if I press A right before you get here, I release the ball for a second and that makes me avoid your takedown, and all these little tricks that I can do, flipping the ball up and do all the extra kind of flourish stuff that lets you deal with the defenders approaching you, actually lets you, you know, have more sophisticated teamwork and team play. I think it takes the game even farther than Rocket League did in adding the, a ramp up to getting to some really interesting, skillful play.
I agree. And I think that is, you know, potentially the thing that might keep me from playing it long term is that there is a quickly, it seems like everybody I play against has already risen past my skill level. And I think what would keep me playing Rematch as a forever game would be friends that I was squatting up with it, you know, every night. Like Miles, you talked about Elden Ring, Night Rain, and doing that. I think if you have your crew, it could make for a really fun game. I played one game I think I probably played 2.5-3 hours of Rematch so far. And one game, everybody else on my team had their mic on. And I was like, okay, unmute. Let's go. Let's do it. Well, let's play. And it was awesome. We were playing positions. We were playing a 4v4 game. We were spaced out. We were rotating the ball. We were only calling for shots when we needed it. And it was like, okay, I'm going to shoot high. Come get the rebound. Beautiful. Beautiful. And then, you know, every other game is what you'd expect some of those things to be. But I think there's a lot of potential here. The only real nit I have about it, one I've read about and I'm not skilled enough to experience, but I've heard some folks are having trouble with lag or ping rate and games being unstable for folks at a really high level. It's preventing that play. I'm not there. I haven't noticed that on my end. But the other thing is, I know it's on Xbox. It's on Game Pass, but it's not a free game, but it really does a lot of the Battle Pass things. And I know it's not the first game to do that, and it won't be the last, but that always rubs me the wrong way a little bit, where it's like, this is $40. And now you're just feeding me right into the Battle Pass to get all the cosmetics and do the thing and kind of have that carrot other than just winning games.
Yeah.
So that bums me out a little bit, but I think it's the concept and the execution is a home run, or I should say a hat trick.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The execution is really well done. I think the game looks really great. The animations are awesome. It's interesting that they've really shied away, as you said, from anything too outlandish. I mean, you can get some of the cosmetics are goofy, but like it's human beings that look like human beings. It's setting is pretty much authentic to setting, although it has that Rocket League like vibrant color look to it. But yeah, it's really, I think, excellent on a number of levels, and it's an esport waiting to happen. I just feel like this thing is going to take off and become an esport like Rocket League is. I have a huge gripe against this game because it arrived at a really interesting moment in my life and my fatherhood, in that just recently, last week, a couple weeks ago maybe, my son came home from a birthday party and he said, "Dad, we played this really awesome game at so-and-so's birthday. Have you heard of a game called Rocket League?" And I was like, "Yes, I have, son." He said, do you have it?" I said, "I believe so. Let's search the Steam library." "Oh yeah, last played 2017. I definitely have Rocket League," or whatever it was. I haven't touched Rocket League in quite a long time. But he said, "Dad, can we play it?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely, we can play Rocket League." And so over the last couple of weeks, my son and I have been playing a ton of Rocket League. And I got into that game when it first came out and became a big deal, and everybody was talking about it. And I played a bunch of it with people, by myself, whatever. And then, as is evidenced from my Steam, like not even really sure I still owned it, haven't touched it in years. But it's still awesome. They just started a new season. It's got lots of new modes from when I played, which is obviously maybe not that new, but we have been having so much fun. And I got to tell you guys, on my super ultra wide monitor, playing split screen is like having two full-size screens. It's incredible. We play father and son, co-op split screen, co-op games of split screen. Sometimes we play against each other, but we often play side by side on the same team. And we almost exclusively play offline against bots. Not interested in having my son get into the online world just yet. Certainly don't want him to have the microphone on or any of that stuff. Don't want to be hearing the nonsense that comes over when we play against randoms. But we get this really fun experience where we can set the difficulty level of the bots that we're playing against or with. We can, you know, have tons of fun, just the two of us in this very closed environment. And so what happened this week is, hey, you like Rocket League? Son, I played this closed beta of this game that just came out. You want to play, it's more like actual soccer. He, you know, he's eight. Of course he was in soccer at some point in his life, loves soccer. This sounds perfect. Let's load up Rematch. Guess what Rematch does not support? Local co-op. Local split screen at all. Guess what it also does not support? Bots. It is exclusively an online experience where you play against other human beings solo. You can obviously, you know, team up with people that remotely, but you cannot team up with someone on the same computer. And it broke my heart. I was like, oh, I really feel the absence of this feature. As a father who wanted to play this soccer game with my son, it bums me out that this game did not 1.0 ship with that feature. I'm very hopeful they add it in the future, although I've been doing some Googling and it seems like the developers have said we have no intent to bring that to the game. And that really breaks my heart. But I still remain hopeful that this will, you know, take off and be successful. And, you know, in the same time horizon that I returned to Rocket League, I can return to Rematch someday and be able to play split screen couch co-op style. But yeah, that's my biggest gripe against the entire experience, because it's a really fun, cool game that I think would be a blast to play with my kid sitting next to each other, and we can't. So bums me out.
It is. We're in this weird world, right? Of like how great online, everybody used to play online. That, like Miles talked about at the beginning of the show, with like the pandemic-ification of gaming. It's like you're alone in your bubble and you're playing with friends, and that's how people play games. That's why they want to play games. And most people, I'm sure the data shows, most people aren't split screening or doing whatever. Yeah. And so it's like the answer for Rematch. I'm not saying this is a good answer, but the answer for Rematch is like, your son's on your Steam Deck,
yeah,
and you're on your computer, and you're kind of in the same room on your same devices or whatever it is. You know,
but we also don't want to be playing with other people. I mean, I was like, okay, because I brought him down. We're like, oh, let's do it. Let's load it up. And I was like, oh, where do you start the second player? I was like, oh, it doesn't support it. Oh, okay. Well, we set this all up. You want to try it? We'll go through the tutorial, which, by the way, Rematch has an excellent tutorial, I think, bringing you into that game. It's really, really well done. And then I'll let you play a match. Immediately, it was like, blah, blah, like voices shooting through my speakers. I'm like, okay, turning the audio off, because I don't want to hear the inevitable cursing that'll happen. And I'm playing against people, and I just felt like it is unfair to compare a game that has just been released to a game that's been out for many years and has been updated and supported, you know, constantly, like Rocket League.
And was technically the second one of that game also.
Right.
Because nobody played whatever the first hypercar racy soccer game.
100% recognize it's unfair to compare those two things. But in the marketplace, I have two options. And we, you know, he finished that match. And he's like, Dad, I don't really want to play against real people. And I was like, I don't want you to be playing against real people. Let's go back to Rocket League. And we went back and played three matches of Rocket League that day. And, you know, he has not returned to Rematch. I've played a lot more Rematch. But what the joy that we're having and the implementation of that split screen is so well done in Rocket League. It's effortless. It's seamless. It's beautiful. Like I said, with the super ultra wide monitor, it's like, it's perfection. So we're going to be continuing to play a lot more Rocket League, and we're having a ton of fun with it. And there's all these cool modes and, you know, so I'll probably be playing a lot less Rematch than I would have otherwise, which is a bummer.
What it has and that your son might enjoy, and I dabbled in some of these as I tried to skill up. That was my afternoon today. I was like, man, that one game when we were good felt so good. How can I not be the liability? how can I skill up? Is I found some of the, you know, it's not just the tutorial, which you mentioned is excellent. There are, you know, games, like get good games, you know, get through these gates in time, do this defensive maneuver, like score attack,
skill challenges.
Yeah. Skill challenges that, you know, maybe by the time your son masters them, they will add the, you know, local co-op mode you're looking for and he can dominate. But that stuff I think is pretty fun. But I agree with you. I do wish there is a little more to the game itself other than you're playing either 3v3, 4v4 or 5v5 at this point.
But tons of fun. And like we both were saying, a really interesting implementation of something that has been, you know, to have something like FIFA, which is like this dominant soccer game. And yes, this doesn't contain any of the, you know, licensed team names that I think a lot of people go to FIFA for. But the pure feeling of playing soccer and feeling like, oh, I can do many of the things that a human being can do on the pitch and have that cool skill set and show off my sweet moves and, you know, I'm better than you. Like it captures all of that stuff really well, I think.
Yeah. And it really straddles the line of, excuse me, of arcade meets realistic. Like it's not NBA Jam. It's not He's on Fire level or NFL Blitz, you know, killing a guy from 50 yards away, but it is superhuman. You still have a boost, but then you do a bicycle kick that's a little elevated, but it's still a bicycle kick. And so living in that world, that fantasy they've created is really fun.
Agreed. All right, I have one more game on my playlist we'll get to right after our last break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. All right, so I have one more thing I want to talk about, which is a wild thing. You know, folks that listen to the show know how much I love Balatro. And, you know, Balatro is a huge, massive hit taken over the world, and rightfully so, in my opinion. So, of course, like Vampire Survivor before it, there are a lot of Balatro likes that have hit Steam, a whole bunch, because, you know, it has proven that it can, you can do something with, you know, just a very small development team, one person in Balatro's case, very simplistic graphics, and it really is mechanically so fun and addictive. So people have applied this notion of Balatro-esque, you know, jokers and all that stuff to a lot of different other games. You can find numerous ones of them. I came across one this week that I I think is pretty clever. I think this is also $9. It's a very inexpensive game. It's called Type Inc. I think it's a play on typing. Type Inc. TYPINC, period, is part of the title. And this is like Mavis Beacon teaches typing Bellatro style. So the explicit stated goal of Type Inc. is to make you a better typist. So if that's something you're interested in, and you know, these days people only type with their thumbs, so maybe this is a lost art anyway. But I'm intrigued by these type of things. You know, Typing of the Dead is an old favorite of mine from the old Dreamcast days, and the Mavis Beacon I grew up with. And there's this notion of gamifying a real life skill is something I really love. I love the idea of I'm spending my game time and having genuine fun, but also I come away from that with a skill that can be applied in an area that isn't gaming. I love when that happens. It's all too rare, I think, but it happens every now and again. Anyway, Type Inc. is that. So the idea here is you are given a block of text and you have to type it as fast as possible. And it keeps track of so it shows you this block of text. And as you type, it's filling in the letters of the text green if you get it right and red if you get it wrong. And so you have to go, you know, backspace if you get it wrong. And you're trying to be as quick and accurate as you can be. And it keeps track of your words per minute and your accuracy percentage as the fewer times that you can have to backspace and correct yourself, the more accurate you are. So it's literally just, you know, type fast and well. But where it gets like Bellatro is you earn cash, and it is shamelessly ripping off Bellatro. Even the denominations of cash are the same thing. You'll get like $3 or $5 or $6, you know, just like Bellatro. And after every round, you have a grouping of what would be in Bellatro jokers. And jokers in Bellatro, of course, are these sort of rule-breaking cards that let you add multipliers to your score to help you build higher scores. And it's exactly the same here, except the way it works is the multipliers are like, hey, the letter B gets more points now. So every time you type the letter B.
B, like for Bellatro.
yeah. Or, you know, there's a card that you can buy and add to your, you know, your power-ups. I can't remember what they're called, but your upgrades or whatever it is. Modifiers, maybe that's what it is. That will stack, and you can, you know, juice your score by letter B. Any of the letters, right, can be one of the things. There'll be things like you don't mess up for 20 characters or more, so your multiplier goes up. But there's also ones where, like, you do – every time you do mess up and it hasn't been 20 characters. So it's like you can build in sort of mitigating for your mistakes, which is fun. Or it'll say, you know, every time you have a word that has two vowels back to back, like, you know, a sound or zoom or whatever that has, you know, double vowels. So the kinds of power-ups that there are, I think, are really clever and are always fun to discover, you know, in a way that I don't even think Bellatro was. Like, Bellatro has a billion D jokers, and often they're really cool and really fun. But I never was like tickled by the notion of them in the same way that I am here with Type Inc., where it's like, I'm trying to think of, I should have written down a bunch of them, but there's some really just zany ideas of every time you write a comma, you'll get a bonus, you know, multiplier, or any words ending in Y, or anytime you do capital letters, or, you know, it's like these things that you're betting on, or things that you will do, like, you know, messing up or not messing up, or you know, anytime you hit the shift key, or it's great. It's it's gamifying some a skill that I don't think people care about much anymore. But I was having fun with it, and I found out that I am an exceedingly slow typer. I was like topping out at like 62, 63 words per minute, feeling like I was just crushing it, and like, oh, oh no, I am not crushing it. Typing, if you are interested in any way in becoming a better, faster typist, and also like Balatro type games, like it's a lovely marriage of those two concepts, and it works. Like it's, I think, you know, if there's any part of you that thinks typing can be fun, which I think already excludes a large number of people, but if typing can be fun, this makes it fun. I think this makes typing fun. If you think typing can be fun. But I also love just the ecosystem of the indie game scene where, you know, like Vampire Survivor comes along, somebody's like figured out this new thing, this, you know, this auto attack system with, you know, millions of enemies coming at you and leveling up fast. And people are like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, what about this plus that? What about this plus that? And the same thing with Balatro, which like Balatro comes along and it's this really innovative, interesting idea. And so now you can find, you know, the Balatro pachinko game. You can find Balatro. There's a Balatro cooking game. There's all kinds of Balatro card games, solitaire, blackjack, all of them. And there's one that's not out yet that I'm very excited about, that somebody's doing Balatro Scrabble. I think it's called like Word Zing or something like that. I can't remember, but I'm excited. It's not out yet. There's also a Balatro Mahjong that's on Steam. So there's a million Balatro likes now. It's its own subcategory. And I love that. I just love that. I just love how people are like, hey, I can latch. I mean, maybe it's a little exploitive of the original thing, but I like how people are like, well, like, what can I graft this new mechanic onto that will be interesting? And I'm down for that. I think it's cool. So again, that game is called Typink, and it's very inexpensive, and it's on Steam. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Miles Dompierre, always a blast having you on the show. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Tell folks so they can keep up with you and all the cool stuff you do online.
Yeah. If you want to keep in touch with me, I'm on most social media platforms, just at Miles Dompierre. And if you want to keep up to date with my work stuff, you can follow the Illphonic social channels as well.
Yes. These are the folks that, that did the Killer Clowns game and, the Predator, game and what was the other Ghostbusters, I think, right? Weren't those?
Yeah. Spirits Unleashed. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I'm preparing for the British invasion, my friend. While you're out on vacation, we're going to have a great show next week again with Philippe Osher and Alex Solman joining me for 4th of July weekend. Nothing says America like, dear Britain, take me back. But like pre-Brexit, take me back.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Take me back pre me seeing 28 years later. Like, yeah. At some point, let's take me back, but maybe not
back
right
to
now.
1999, please. Can
I? Yeah. I'm going to start a community that doesn't allow any technology invented after 2010. And yeah. We will just live in that community and we will play, what is that, Xbox 360? Is that 2010? Xbox
360 and PS3. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good gen. All right. Take me back. but I am on Blue Sky. This show is on Blue Sky as DLC Hype Train. And more importantly, join the Discord. As Jeff mentioned at the top of the show, if you got a pocket knife, we want to see it. And then we want to reply to it with the Crocodile Dundee gif that says it's not a knife. Like that's all I want to do this week, Jeff, is see people's
You're really selling knife. It.
Really I want to expand it actually. I want to see everybody's everyday carry. Yeah.
Let's get
what
to
are you
spoons.
Carrying?
Can we go to spoons?
No one every day carries a spoon, bro. Well,
why not? Let's make that a thing.
Yogurt enthusiasts might.
Yes. Thank you, Miles. Thank you. Are you going to go-gurt? No, you need a spoon.
Jeff, what about you? How's the podcast empire?
Oh, it's a trucking along. We got the film cast where you can listen to me talk about movies and TV shows. And we have concerns the Comedy Science Show, where you can learn something and laugh along the way, both of which feature myself and are available wherever you get podcasts. Check them out. Oh, not to mention the book club. We do in the book club. Lana Bashinsky and I doing the book club. Really fun times doing that as well. That's on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/KanataJeff. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Miles, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Absolutely. And I might be a little tardy to the party here, but I'm finally catching up on The Rehearsal. So I've been watching season 2 of The Rehearsal on HBO. If you're unaware of the premise, Nathan Fielder basically meticulously recreates people's environments to give them opportunities to rehearse different scenarios in their lives to create the perfect outcome. And it's a documentary-ish that tries to layer in comedy elements. And season 2 is about aviation safety. And it is a wild ride that gets a lot of really noteworthy people involved and has a pretty serious message overall, sprinkled with Nathan Fielder being this absolutely awkward weirdo. And it's a delightful effect. It's so good. It's so funny. It's so uncomfortable. And it's, in my opinion, it's a must watch. If you haven't dabbled with the show, you can watch season 1 just to get an idea of what the premise is. But season 2 is where things have really come together in a really big way.
Agreed. It's I think he's a genius. And season 2 ends with sort of a magic trick, which is pretty wild. It's a pretty special show. I completely agree with that recommendation. Great one. The Rehearsal on HBO Max, the one to watch for HBO Max. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
It was your recommendation, as I think you got to see it early for a review. You said, go see F1, see it in IMAX.
Yeah.
So my wife, my youngest, and I did just that. We saw F1 in IMAX. And, Portlandia used to say, put a bird on it, right? What I say to Top Gun Maverick and now to F1, put a camera in it. You know, whatever it is, find the fast moving thing and put a camera in it, and you're gonna have a summer blockbuster. It is a good time at the movies, and just vaguely, it's a hell of a Street Fighter movie, Jeff. It's a hell of a Street Fighter movie.
It's I think it is the IMAX movie to see. You know, Oppenheimer can take a flying leap as far as I'm concerned when it comes to IMAX. Everybody was trying to see Oppenheimer and IMAX. Well, so you can see people sitting in a room talking on a massive screen. No.
Do you know how slow those Jeeps were in Oppenheimer? Just rumbling through base. Just such slow Jeeps.
Dude, F1 in IMAX. That's the only way to see that movie. It's a thing. Although I was told by the PR people that it is to only ever be referred to as F1 registered trademark, the movie.
Well, guess who didn't see it via PR people? Yeah. So they can F9 that comment.
All right. Hard left turn into my parting gift. I am somebody that enjoys Frisbee.
That's
I
like turn Frisbee. 4, by the way. Turn 4 is the hard left.
I love a Frisbee. I love getting out on a grassy knoll and Frisbeeing. My son and I like to Frisbee. A whole family. We love a Frisbee. Let me tell you something, folks. I have in my life been many times, and I'm sure not an uncommon experience, I've been handed a free Frisbee. Hey, sign up for a credit card. I'll give you a free Frisbee. Hey, come down.
The PR people say flying disc.
Yeah.
Right. Frisbee is Frisbee restricted. The original flying disc, right. I think.
But the point I'm trying to make here. Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. The point I'm trying to make here is most often in my life, the times I have used a flying disc, it has been a cheap little promo item that I was handed for free at some bank or, I don't know, video game events. I don't know. I get you get them. It's a thing. Tchotchke. They'll hand you. It's a free Frisbee. I was at a friend's event, summer event, and they had purchased a $30 Frisbee. And I thought to myself, I said, self, why would anyone buy a $30 Frisbee when you could go to a bank and they'll hand you one, or a car wash, or I don't know, a video game event? You get a free Frisbee. I'm drowning in free Frisbees over here. It's a little tchotchke. Do I buy myself key rings? No, I get free key rings. If I go into a bank, do I buy pens? I'm not buying a $30 Frisbee. Well, friends,
work a job for money? No, you go into a bank with a mask on. And you grab a Frisbee and you say, give me the money.
I'm here to tell you, friends, I went out and bought myself a $30 Frisbee. There's a difference between the crappy, free, junk, tchotchke flying disc and a $30 Frisbee. And it's like throwing butter. It's amazing. If you are into Frisbees at all, ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to recommend investing in a decent Frisbee. It was a life-changing experience for me. It's like driving the Ferrari of Frisbees. It was amazing. I don't want to oversell it, but it was a pretty big deal for me.
Did you get a custom carrying case?
Oh, do they have those?
Growing up, my dad's best friend was a professional Frisbee player. And this dude would come equipped with a little side holster to fit like one flying disc.
Amazing.
So that's how you know you're serious about the flying disc.
I can't even front. That's incredible. That's like the guy that shows up at the pool hall with his own pool cue. You know, that's like the
No, I brought my own. Thank you.
Yeah. Sick. Oh, I got to get – I wonder how much his Frisbee was not – it was way over $30. I can only guess.
I mean, this was back in the late 90s, so it was probably cheaper. But.
I went from how could anyone spend $30 on a Frisbee to how could anyone not spend $30 on a Frisbee. It was an amazing experience for me. I couldn't believe the difference of a well-crafted Frisbee to a piece of junk. Just
wait until Jeff tries writing with the real pen, everybody.
This is what I've been missing out on. Damn, Chase.
All my pens have little chains on them with a snapped end. You know,
when you're writing at somebody a thank you card, you get the pen, you on your tongue, you rub it on your hand, on your hand, and then you get two words, and you shake it.
Just here to recommend $30 pen.
You can just write thank you.
All right. We also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Rob from California. Rob says, hello to you all. My parting gift suggestion is a charity I just came across and I wanted to share. The name is Real Outreach, R-E-E-L, Real Outreach. That would be a bonus in type ink, by the way, two E's there. Real Outreach. They are a Texas-based nonprofit helping underprivileged children have great and fun nights out at the movies. They just recently had an event for the new Lilo and Stitch film and are now looking for support for this summer's release of James Gunn's Superman. They rent out full theaters for the kids, provide concessions, snacks, and fun take-home keepsakes.
Maybe a Frisbee. I don't know. Maybe a Frisbee.
And they work in conjunction with other local agencies like the Boys and Girls Clubs to make these events happen, all of which I think sounds simply wonderful. Again, the charity is new to me, and I always encourage everyone to research any potential charity for themselves. But what I've seen so far seems like a good dude and his team doing a good thing, which is awesome. They can be found at realoutreach.com, R-E-E-L, outreach.com, and they're at Real Outreach on Facebook and Blue Sky. Please check them out and think about supporting them if you're so inclined. Thanks and have a great day, Rob. Thanks, Rob. I love folks sharing charities with us. And this one seems particularly cool. Real Outreach, giving kids a fun night out at the movies. That just sounds really lovely. Really lovely. Thank you for sending that along to us. And if you have a parting gift you'd like to share, like Rob did, don't hesitate. Send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Miles Dompierre and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merch for our show by visiting our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible. We would not be there without them. If you'd like to become one, please visit patreon.com/dlcpod. Thank you, patrons, for all your generous support. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.